We're talking about workplace burnout here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. For the first time, the World Health Organization classified workplace burnout as an occupational hazard earlier this year. The WHO says it's a syndrome resulting from chronic workplace stress that hasn't been successfully managed. And there's a cost to burnout. According to researchers at Harvard and Stanford, burnout contributed to upwards of $190 billion in healthcare costs in 2016 dollars. Have you experienced burnout? What did you do? Did you leave your job or find a way to deal with it? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Eric Lawrenson is a tech and culture reporter for the Capital Times, and he's reported on burnout around Madison. Eric, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hello. I'm so happy to be here.
So you talked to so many different people who've experienced burnout. You were at an animal shelter worker who does theater at night, and a young man who burned out pursuing an architecture degree, a software developer. Did any of those stories have some common threads?
Well, the common thread is, as the topic of this segment would suggest, is burnout. Everyone had, in some way, shape, or form, an experience related to the work that they were doing, in which they had chronic stressors on the job that led to exhaustion, that led to detachment from the work that they were doing, that led to an inability to do the job in the way they wanted, to the level that they wanted to be able to do that job. So basically less efficacy on the job. And as you're saying, like, these are jobs across sectors, all sorts of types of employment, or even in the context of higher education, burnout can manifest. Chronic stressors are the common thread here.
When you talk to these people, when did they realize that something was wrong? I mean, did they have a moment where they said, this is not how it should be?
Yeah, there are a couple answers to that question, actually. I think for a lot of people, it took sort of this, quote, national conversation, unquote, about burnout to happen before they realized that there was a vocabulary out there for the things that they were experiencing. Multiple people I talked to said that they only realized what they were experiencing once they heard either a lecturer or a news story talking about this issue of burnout in the workplace. And they said, oh, hey, that's kind of familiar to me. But even just recognizing some of those symptoms of exhaustion, fatigue, detachment, a couple of people also told me, like, you know, no, it's not something where you just wake up one morning and you have it. It accumulates over time, kind of. And then,
oh, it creeps up on you.
It can creep up on you because, you know, it's not something that sort of collides with you all at once. It really is that slow creep, that candle burning at both ends that eventually takes its toll. And one day maybe you'll slowly have this realization, oh, wait, this has been a lot. You know, I'm feeling the weight of this.
Yeah. Tell us about Sagacious Levingston, who burned out working on a project she started called Infamous Mothers.
Yeah. So Sagacious started Infamous Mothers in 2016. Infamous Mothers is a really interesting company, actually. It is a company all about telling the stories of women who have lived at the fringes of society, as she puts it. Women who have struggled with drug addiction or have been incarcerated, what have you, but who have come out and found success and have become like high achieving people in their own right. Producing books, writing plays, holding conferences to highlight these stories of these women. And yeah, she put a lot of herself into this company. The work hours, I believe she told me, could be like upwards of like 60 plus hours a week. But on top of that, it was really emotional work. There was an emotional toil to the work that she was doing because it was, she was making herself vulnerable because she herself is one of the infamous mothers that, you know, she has been focusing on for this project. And I mean, at the end of the day, after 3 years of doing this, I think she felt the weight of her burnout and she just needed to check out for a year. And she said she just took a year in which she, quote, stopped engaging with the world, unquote. And she, just talked about just lying in bed and just feeling a sense, that sense of like inability to achieve her goals, a sort of just a profound sense of not being able to do her work in the way that she wanted to. And she came through the right now she's working on Infamous Mothers 2.0, actually the second chapter of her organization. But clearly burnout for her really took a toll, in the sense that it took away this year of her life in which she said she just couldn't do anything.
We're talking about chronic workplace stress, what the WHO labels as a real occupational phenomenon. Eric Lawrenson is a tech and culture reporter for the Capital Times. He's been writing about burnout. What do you think? Why did you think you burned out at a job? Was it workload or the hours? Maybe you felt your manager wasn't listening to your needs. Was it the pay or training, advancement? Tell us about your experience at 800-642-1234. Eric, a part of this conversation is whether burnout is a bigger issue for millennials than it is for previous generations. What do we know about that in terms of generational differences?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. This has been a big part of the conversation. And Helen Peterson, who is a journalist, wrote a really like a viral essay for BuzzFeed News about how millennials are the burnout generation. In terms of empirical data supporting that, there isn't a lot outside of some survey data that we have from Gallup in 2018, which found that not only do 2/3 of Americans say they've experienced burnout in some way, shape, or form, but disproportionately, you know, millennials were very highly represented in those numbers. That said, the reason that Anne Helen Peterson piece went viral is because so many people and so many millennials saw themselves in it. You know, they felt that it resonated with them. That hypothesis at least felt true based on their, you know, their own lived experience. So it's one of those things where data hasn't really borne it out, but it is an interesting example of how identity, and in this case, age, may actually sort of be something that informs burnout.
As you, you know, after writing this story, I'm sure you are much more aware of work-life balance.
Wait, as a journalist, I had to work long hours? No, that doesn't happen. No.
Well, I mean, how did you see your own environment after you had done so many interviews about burnout?
Yeah. I mean, okay, full disclosure, yeah, I've definitely experienced burnout in my life. And I think that, you know, approaching this story, I was very personally curious to, you know, hear about the experiences of other people in part, because, you know, I was curious if I would hear myself in any of those stories. And, you know, I think that for me right now, I mean, I'm in a good place right now, I think reporting on this did make me a little bit more cognizant of, like, you know, on an individual level, certainly, like, I have no control necessarily over some of the big picture, you know, things about the news cycle, but I can make sure that I'm taking care of myself, you know, and making sure that I'm saying no, that I'm turning off Slack every once in a while, and, you know, taking time for me.
Eric, thank you for joining us.
Oh, of course. Thank you.
Eric Lawrenson is a tech and culture reporter for the Capital Times. Coming up, we talk with an HR professor who studies employee turnover. When have you left jobs in the past? Why did you leave? Was it about burnout? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about burnout and chronic stress at work. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here on a Friday. A national retention report released last year said the top three reasons for employees to leave jobs in 2017 were career development, work-life balance, and manager behavior. So we're talking about the work-life balance piece of it. Why do you think you burned out at a current or past job? Was it the workload? Were the hours too long? Maybe you felt like your manager wasn't listening to your needs. Join in the conversation at any point here, 800-642-1234. John Hausknecht is an associate professor of human resources at Cornell University, where he researches employee selection and turnover. John, welcome to the Ideas Network.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So we've heard different stories about burnout, people's different experiences. A lot of the conversation wraps around workload and hours. How important, though, is work-life balance when it comes to burnout and turnover?
Yeah, I think work-life balance is definitely a piece of what contributes to burnout. I think there's other contributing factors there around repetitive work and so on. But, you know, I think in the broader scheme of things from a research standpoint, we know that there's a multitude of factors that are contributing to turnover beyond burnout. So, you know, I think it's a piece of the puzzle, but there are many others.
So what are some of those other factors that rise to the top for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, in a lot of the research, it really revolves around a couple key factors. I'd say at the start, it's around what organizations are doing in terms of their HR practices. So how are they recruiting and selecting employees? What are they doing around training and rewards? So a lot of that kind of internal management practices contribute certainly to what we see with turnover. As you mentioned at the opening here around leadership, we know that to be a key contributor. Work attitudes, how people feel about the work that they're doing, their engagement levels. And I think another piece that a lot of people don't think about is that at a more macro level, you have a key influence around local labor market conditions. So what do people have as alternatives to what they're doing currently? We know that that drives turnover rates as well.
Oh, because there might be a better job out there. And if unemployment if the labor market's very tight, you might be in a better option somewhere else.
Exactly. Yep. And we know that varies geographically. We know it varies over time. So you have this situation where even when employees are maybe dissatisfied or feeling burned out, they don't have anywhere to go. But once those opportunities open up, then you see kind of the situation where turnover rates rise.
Well, look.
Sure.
Yeah, I'd like to look at managers for a moment and the role a boss can play in burnout. Kian Savar worked as an electronic data engineer at an electronic health records company called Epic Systems for almost 2 years. And he says he had trouble knowing how much work he was supposed to do, so he ended up working a lot.
I guess it seems like the expectations are never really that clearly made. And if you are willing to take work, it seems like Epic is willing to give it, and it just seemed to keep coming and coming. So more and more, it seemed like work was taking up an unhealthy portion of my life.
Yeah, so it sounds like if you don't say no and you don't set boundaries, that this could also be a problem on the road to burnout.
Yeah, I think for sure we know that there's this concept called role clarity out there in the research that's a key driver of turnover, and it's exactly related to what your person said there, which is that if you're not clear on what you're asked to do or how much work you're asked to do, then you sort of you know, have this situation where you just do more. And so that does come back to, you know, how the organization is managing work design, how they're training leaders and managers to set those expectations and then allow employees to say no or to, you know, be able to go home at a certain time. So I definitely think there's a role there for leaders to help set expectations, help to be sensitive to employee burnout and take steps to try to mitigate it.
We're looking at chronic stress in the workplace and what leads to burnout with John Hausknecht. He's an associate professor of human resources at Cornell. Maybe you've dealt with burnout perhaps outside of the workplace setting. Maybe it was taking care of a loved one and feeling like everything was too much. What did you do? What would you recommend if you're in this situation? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Cameron now in Milwaukee. Hi, Cameron.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your story?
So Yeah, I experienced burnout working remotely. I started a job about a year and a half ago, and I actually recently left it due to the burnout. I was working with a company in Europe, and the hours became too much. You could work whenever you wanted, and that kind of became the expectation with immediacy. I needed to uninstall it got to the point where I needed to uninstall applications on the weekend just to avoid work. It became overwhelming, and I actually recently left that job in a remote space to favor a job in Milwaukee where I have a commute now. So it was a lot, and I definitely experienced burnout with that.
What's the difference now? Have you seen a difference in yourself?
Yeah, it was waking up in the morning, just knowing that I had a commute to look forward to. I know it sounds really strange, but I actually relished that time listening to NPR and the radio. But it was more just knowing that I didn't have to stay up until 12 o'clock at night. There was a work-life separation.
Right.
So that really helped.
Cameron, when you were working remotely with a firm in Europe, did you have to think about time zone a lot and being up when they're up?
Yeah, we did. It was a 6-hour time difference, and I didn't have any other colleagues in the States, so we really had to relay messages back and forth and be as efficient with our time as possible. And it just that even added to the further stress of the situation due to the delay in getting answers. So then you were expected to have an immediate answer when you woke up or right before you go to bed, and the time zone overlaps were very difficult too.
Cameron, thanks so much for explaining your situation. John, what is the impact of having to be always on and working remotely?
Yeah, I think, this is one of those emerging areas where we're starting to see the research on what this means for employees and their turnover. But in terms of the work-life literature, there's this idea of, role spillover and overlap. And when you have work kind of always there, it's really difficult to, I think, compartmentalize that relative to other aspects of your life. So I can certainly relate to his story there. I think there's another piece, too, that we've seen in the literature around this concept of schedule control. And we see it anywhere from, healthcare to retail. When people don't know when they're expected to work or produce, something that the team needs, and they sort of just have to say no to everything else and prioritize what might come through work, that's really tough and can be a contributor to both the lack of work-life balance, the burnout, and then ultimately leaving one's job.
Working remotely became such a big thing a few years back, and then some large companies started bringing workers back into the workplace. One of the things that might be a drawback would be visibility, that your peers can't see you there at work doing the work. What do you make of that?
For sure, yeah. I think it's the visibility. I also think there's something to be said for building collaboration with teammates face-to-face and sort of having that buffer of understanding what work needs to be done, how it needs to be done, having a boss or manager to go to without having to get on a call or, video chat to ask a simple question. So, some of those small things kind of add up. And when you're remote, you're really sort of on your own to figure those things out. And that actually can be stressful in and of itself.
Let's bring in Brandon now in Madison. Hi, Brandon.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I understand you're in med school.
Yeah, I'm one of the medical students at Madison, and I think this is wonderful that you're talking about burnout in the workplace and even at home. So as a medical student, doctors go through burnout all the time, and, we learn about burnout as part of our curriculum. And, we can only do so much for ourselves. One of the techniques we learn about is mindfulness, kind of the new paradigm shift. It's the new exercise for the brain, being able to be mindful about yourself, taking care of yourself. And we teach our patients this all the time. But the issue is we can only do so much for ourselves. We always say that, there's a systems approach and we're always battling the system. There's struggles with the hospital, there's struggles with the insurance companies, and et cetera. And so, there's a top-up approach and a bottom-up approach, a top-down approach.
Brandon, have you ever felt burnout yourself?
Yeah. So as a medical student, you know, when we're doing different rotations, we have these high expectations. We're put into situations that we haven't really been exposed to. We're getting graded at the same time. We have to work, you know, 60 hours a week and find time to study. So sometimes it's difficult to find time for ourselves to take care of ourselves, to eat right and perform exercises and being able to call family. It's a struggle sometimes, yeah.
Brandon, thank you so much for explaining your situation as a med student. We're looking at workplace burnout this hour, where it comes from, how to deal with it. Cornell University Human Resources Professor John Hauskonnect studies the factors that contribute to turnover. Your thoughts on it at 800-642-1234. Coming up, we look at the things that companies can do to limit turnover. That's after this news update here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about chronic stress at work that leads to burnout. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The estimates are that employee burnout translates into a loss of hundreds of billions of dollars a year for businesses in our country. And earlier this year, the World Health Organization classified burnout as a medical diagnosis, and they added the condition into the International Classification of Diseases. So when you've left jobs in the past, why did you leave? Was burnout a part of it, or were there other factors pushing you to leave? What do you think people should do when they're experiencing burnout? Do you have advice? Join in, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. John Hauskonnect is with us. He's an associate professor of human resources at Cornell University, and he researches employee turnover. Let's bring in another voice here, Brianna in Madison. Hi, Brianna.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a paralegal at a law firm in Madison, and I think a huge part of employee burnout and turnover, especially, with attorneys who work long hours, and a part of these letters that are bringing a lot of attention on social media from bosses who have written open letters to employees saying, you know, I don't expect you to apologize for your life and for having family issues that you have to take care of. As long as you come in and get your work done, you know, I trust you to do that. And I think that is so true when it comes to stress at work and burnout. And I'm lucky that I have a job where my bosses, you know, don't expect us to have to apologize for having to, you know, take care of a family emergency and things like that. And I have left jobs before where I've been, you know, scared to even approach my boss because I had an issue to take care of outside of the workplace. And I just think it's unrealistic to expect employees to be able to balance work and life without there being, you know, some leeway there to not have to, you know, be reprimanded for taking care of things outside of work.
Brianna, it sounds like it takes a culture to be able to think that way and that your law firm there has that type of culture.
Absolutely. And I think that is a huge unwritten benefit that I have. And I, you know, that's why I've stayed there and why I plan to stay there, because I just value that benefit and the culture of my workplace.
John Hauskonnect, you know, here we are hearing from a law firm. We heard from a medical student before the news break. What do you make of these experiences?
Yeah, I think there are examples of what companies can be thinking about if they're interested in, you know, both reducing burnout, but also retaining their best people. And the caller that you just had on, I think, mentioned two of the most important pieces around leadership support and culture. So we know it's one thing to put, you know, on paper that this is an organization that values work-life balance or that invests in its people. But when it comes down to it, it's the things that the caller mentioned. It's when you have that appointment that you need to take care of. And if you don't have the support from your manager or from your senior leadership, then you feel the pressure to actually put that aside and, you know, just focus on work. So I think that's a key piece. And the culture is, you know, follows that. It has to come from the top, and it has to be sort of a real, real policy, not just one that's on paper.
When you look at recruitment and retention, can you talk about the exit interviews and what are called stay interviews, where companies talk to current employees about why they stay? What can HR learn from those types of interviews?
Yeah, I think, you know, they do have some value in terms of starting to provide some data for the organization to take a look at more holistically and think about interventions. We know that it's oftentimes when people look back and try to comment on the reasons for leaving, there's a little bit of noise in the system, if you will, in terms of what that data actually means. But nonetheless, it's a good starting point. I think another thing that companies are doing around data collection is starting to be more predictive with this and surveying employees while they're on the job, whether that's a stay interview or just a general employee survey, to try to get ahead of the issue and, you know, kind of monitor how employees are feeling, whether it's burnout or just overall satisfaction and engagement. So those are some of the things I think that can help as companies start to think about how to manage the issue.
Well, Jeremy from Racine called in, couldn't stay with us, but he says he thinks that burnout is a public health issue and should employers be held accountable in some way?
Yeah, I think we're starting to see a little bit more of you know, I don't know if you want to call it industry or regulatory take on some of these issues. I found it interesting over in Europe that companies like BMW and Volkswagen are starting to basically create systems that make it difficult or impossible for employees to work outside of work hours. And so, you know, it's a strategy to start to not just say that you can take time off, but they're actually disabling email servers between certain hours and on weekends, and just really kind of making this something that can not only just be a, you know, again, a policy, but something that happens in practice.
Right, because if the email is down or the technology can't work, it will force the employee to not be connected to what's happening at work.
Exactly. And I think there's, you know, some issues with that as well for certain roles and jobs. Maybe that's not a good thing, but it does send the message that this isn't just a, you know, a nice to have, but something that they're actively promoting and taking steps to make it easy and, you know, build it into the culture.
If you're just joining us, we're looking at chronic stress in the workplace and what companies can do about it. John Hauskonnect is an associate professor of human resources at Cornell. You can join in with your experiences at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Betsy now from Franklin. Hi, Betsy.
Hi.
What is your experience?
Well, I worked... I've been gone for 10 years, but for 10 years I worked in a group childcare center and started out, you know, lower and then became a director and stuff. And it just became more and more. And I didn't realize it until my husband said to me, you know, this is too much. And I think sometimes you don't know how stressful it is until somebody kind of opens your eyes to it. I'm still in childcare, just at a different place, and it's still much better. Sometimes it's just the environment where you are. You just don't realize how bad it is.
Yeah, and it's really hard to gain that perspective when you don't know what it's like in another mm-hmm. setting. When did you see things inside yourself that you were experiencing burnout? Was it a slow progression or did something happen?
I think it was a slow progression. You know, as the years went on, looking back, I realized I was just so much so not happy. And I was working more and more hours, you know, 6:30 to 6. And it was just, it became, you know, kind of a toll on our marriage. And my husband said, you know, you just have to leave. So I did. And it's been so much better. You just don't realize it until sometimes you're gone too. I still have dreams about working there.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah. You know, 10 years later.
John, Hauskonnect, this can really impact families as well. Burnout can certainly have implications at home.
Oh, for sure. We know that definitely work to life spillovers happen and vice versa, life to work. So there is this blurring distinction between the two. But, you know, cumulatively, the impact there can take a toll on one side or the other. I think it's also interesting, you know, as the caller mentioned, sometimes you don't know what else is out there. And I think some people are maybe less willing to explore what the alternatives are. But as I mentioned at the outset, I think one of the reasons people are leaving is because they find something that, you know, gives them a little bit better balance or gives them the environment that supports more flexibility or being able to, you know, turn off. So it's interesting that you're hearing that from some of the callers.
So you studied how changes in leadership can impact turnover. You did a study tracking almost 300 locations of a restaurant chain. What did you find?
Yeah, so this is a recent study I did with some of my colleagues looking at what happens when the most senior leader of these locations leaves the location and is replaced with someone else. And so, you know, our thinking was that maybe it's a good thing. You bring in someone new ideas, but also maybe it's a negative for those who remain in terms of, you know, losing a good leader. So we actually track data on the performance and experience of the leaders who are leaving and coming in. And what we found basically is that the people within the restaurant were much more likely to leave if the senior leader who left before them was a high performer. And so, you know, you think about that as someone who's creating a positive work environment, is someone that's easy to work with. So you kind of see this cumulative effect where it starts to influence the entire unit when that senior person leaves. Conversely, if it was a low performer who left, employees were much more likely to stay. And so again, you know, they're sort of sensitive to the idea that maybe their situation will get better under a new leader. And then in terms of the replacement, the more experience they had, if they were had experience with that same leadership role in the past, again, turnover was much lower in those situations than if this was a new leader or someone who was coming in, you know, basically without any of that experience. So I think it just sort of highlights the important influence that leaders have in this whole process and what they can do to influence turnover of employees.
What is the turnover rate like in the restaurant industry?
Well, that's one of those industries that's near the top. So you think about retail, restaurants, hospitality in general. You could be in the 70, 80, 90, 100% voluntary turnover rate on an annual basis. So these are high turnover environments.
We're talking about employee turnover and what leads to burnout with Cornell University's John Hauschenect. He's an associate professor of human resources who studies employee selection and turnover. Have you experienced burnout? Do you think it's up to individual workers or up to companies to make sure burnout isn't a problem? Still time for your thoughts on this at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to this conversation in just a minute. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about work-life integration and what factors into employee burnout, how to address it. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Huffington Post founder, Arianna Huffington, has focused on this after her own burnout caused her to collapse from sleep deprivation, breaking her cheekbone. And her organization has what's called thrive time as part of the workday. It means taking time off to recharge after you've met the deadline, after you've shipped the product or worked over the weekend. So what do you think people should do when they're experiencing burnout? Do you have advice? Still time for you at 800-642-1234. Cornell University's John Hauschenect is an associate professor of human resources who studies turnover, and he stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now with Lisa in Lake Geneva. Hi, Lisa.
Hello. I work in healthcare. I work in the ICU, and it's extremely stressful because they're applying a business portfolio, business management to human factor. So the acuity of the patients is going up. The patient satisfaction is the driving factor, and they're trying to maximize the staff. So every day it is put your roller skates on and you just do, you know, it's just like seven balls in the air at the same time, and you're on a slippery slope.
A slippery slope at an intensive care unit, Lisa, that it also involves a patient in a very critical state. That must be so stressful.
Yeah, it is. And I've been in it a long time, and I'm riding the wave, but it, you know, they're maximizing in the staff and just trying to squeak as much work as we can and still maintain the highest standard for service, which is good, but the health part, the acuity is increasing. We're saving people and doing more interventions that are, you know, just really
what makes you stay in ICU?
Well, I do like the challenge. I just, sometimes you have to have time to think. And when they're burdening you with extra patients, you don't have time to think to make sure that you've got all your bases covered. And so when you're getting interrupted, you can't even finish a thought.
John House Connect, what do you make of what Lisa is saying there? More patients and not enough time to think.
Yeah, I think it's probably not sustainable in the long term. I think from an employer standpoint, I've seen this before where organizations have understaffed in a way to try to, it obviously save cost and optimize business outcomes. And it does take a toll on employees. You start to see the burnout, the stress, the turnover, and that creates additional costs. So you're kind of trying to solve for one thing, but then you create situations where, you know, you have a different set of problems to address as employees get burned out and, you know, start to leave. So it's already a stressful job, I can only imagine. And then adding on top of it, sort of not enough people to do the work is a good recipe for turnover.
Let's bring in Spencer now in Thiensville. Hi, Spencer. What are your thoughts here?
So my first question is I don't understand why it's a public health issue, because won't the market just balance itself out? If there's an incredibly, you know, stressful place to work, people are going to leave that business or company won't be successful and it will rebalance. And then the other thing is that, you know, I was in the Army and, you know, the whole point was to put stress on you to see your breaking points and understand how you need to pull yourself back. In the Army, we had this saying called, you know, they can smoke you long, but they can't smoke you hard. So, you know, basically you're supposed to endure, and your stress management is completely on yourself, like your doctor, like the doctor on the air before about mindfulness. And so my thing is I can't understand why this is a public health issue when we should just be managing our own stress levels. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, Spencer, thanks so much. Can you go there one point at a time, John?
Sure. Yeah, I think, you know, for some jobs, enduring stress is part of the job. So think of the military, maybe even the ICU, and you want employees who have that sort of, you know, high stress tolerance to be able to do the work. So I'd agree there. You know, I think maybe beyond that, there are other roles where the work can be done at a high level without adding the stress to employees. And so I think that's the differentiator. As far as, you know, a public health issue, I'm not so sure of that myself. I mean, I think some of the survey data that's been reported, it's newsworthy, I guess, in terms of percentages that we're seeing. But there's lots of other factors in organizations that are worth looking at. And I think burnout and stress are, you know, a piece of it, but maybe, you know, just kind of putting that in the right context. So, you know, I'd agree with some of the points that the caller raised in some contexts.
But can companies with very high turnover, can that sink them?
Yeah, you know, there are some case examples where organizations have gone out of business essentially due to employee turnover. The one I remember is a law firm where basically an entire group of, I think it was IP lawyers, left for a competitor firm, and it was so damaging that they essentially just kind of shut their doors. So, you know, turnover can be one of those issues that probably more gradually in a lot of cases starts to erode the brand of an organization and people's willingness to work there. And to that caller's point, you know, then they start to think about, you know, what do we do about this, if they can do anything at that point to try to correct it.
Let's bring in Mike in La Crosse. Hi, Mike.
Morning. Great topic, by the way. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple of real quick comments is I'm over 50. I work for a Fortune 500 company, and based upon when I started in the workforce to where I'm at now, the flexibility and the amount of options that people have are really so much more. Paternity leave, working from home, flex time, those kinds of things are really contributing to making it a better work environment, and my company currently really does a great job with that. But the comments you made earlier about work-life balance, I really have changed that within my own group. I manage about 30, 40 people, and I call it work-life blending because balance infers a 50-50 split. And if you're always looking for that 50-50 split, you're going to find out that most of the time it's not that. Blending really infers the fact that sometimes the work's going to be a priority and other times your personal life. And you really have to think in those terms, because if you continue to try and balance things, you're going to find out that it's not normally going to end up that way. And mentally it helps you prepare for those ups and downs and lulls and really high times when you're working. So, but thank you for taking my call. I appreciate your comment.
And Mike, really quickly, in the people you manage, do you ever see signs of burnout? And then what do you do?
You know, I think the expectations are higher. So we have a lot of those programs. I don't see the burnout, but I do see stress levels when the demands are higher, but it ebbs and flows. And so it's not consistent. So we really try and address that. We really try to have an engaging workforce, and our company really focuses on that. So I work for a special place. I know it's not like that everywhere, but I don't see that level, including myself. When I started in the workforce, I worked 60 hours a week. I now work 40 to 45, maybe 48, but it really isn't coming upon me to help that balance, but also make sure I help other people with that same kind of blending. I hear I use the balance word myself, the blending of our lives.
Mike, thank you so much. John, what about blending in the last few moments here we have with you?
Sure. I know. I think it's a great concept, and it recognizes the idea that, you know, each day we don't have a predictable level of how we're going to devote time to work and life. So, you know, thinking more long term of some days being a little bit more focused on what you need to do personally versus other days it's, you know, work takes priority. So I like the concept. And, you know, the caller sort of is a good example of a leader who's trying to think of ways to manage his or her team in a way that makes sense. So I think it's a great, great approach.
Well, John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
John Hauskonnect is an associate professor of human resources at Cornell University. His research focuses on employee selection and turnover. Coming up on Wisconsin Weekend, we take in a truck show in Eau Claire, and we learn about German food traditions ahead of Oktoberfest events and a German pig roast. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.